during the siesta. What's the siesta for except for keeping busy? You'll find some other times too when I will be available for conferences, but the siesta period will be one period, and others too we will find time. I repeat regarding Father Quay, may I urge you, use his very competent services. Thank you. The fourth article of the Creed. I believe in Jesus Christ, who suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, died, and was buried. In the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius, as most of you, if not all of you, know, this corresponds to the whole third week of the exercises. First week being the foundations. Why did God make us? Second week, Christ's public ministry, his preaching and working of miracles. Third week, his passion. That's what this is all about. And on the fourth week, Christ's resurrection and 40 days as the risen Christ in Palestine. When we say we believe in Jesus Christ, who suffered under Pontius Pilate, remember, the Apostles' Creed is called the Apostles' Creed precisely because it was formulated verbally. The words of the Apostles' Creed go back to the first century. To memorize the Apostles' Creed was required of all converts to Christianity. When then we profess to believe that Jesus suffered under Pontius Pilate, believe me, those first century Christians knew exactly, precisely what that meant. And we better know too. The founder of Christianity, one justly accused by his own people, tried, found guilty by them. They could not, being under Roman authority themselves, condemn anyone to death. So they pressured Pilate and did so successfully, and ever since Calvary, the followers of Christ have been condemned unjustly by the Pontius Pilates of now 2,000 years of Christian history, including the Pontius Pilates in Washington, D.C. today. Not to know that is to be living in a dream world. It is therefore not coincidental, but profoundly providential that God, in His infinite wisdom, when He became man, not merely permitted, we have to say chose to be openly rejected by His own chosen people. God chose them, but when God became incarnate and lived among them, they did not choose Him. That is why, for 20 centuries, and depending on how long the world will last, for the next 20 or 40 or 60 centuries to come, until the end of chronological time, it will be the pilots who will condemn the followers of Christ. We ask ourselves, why did the Jews reject Jesus Christ? Why? Here's the question. Why was Jesus rejected by some of the leaders of Israel? Happens to be question 349 in the Catechism. Because they thought He was indifferent to full obedience of their law, to the centrality of the temple and divine worship, and to faith in one God whose glory no human being can share. And as we now know, the Jewish people have never accepted Jesus as the Messiah. To accept Him as the Messiah would be, in effect, to reject. Reject whom? Well, reject the one who came as the Messiah. The real Messiah came. And when He came, His own people rejected Him. And the reason the Catechism goes out of its way out of its way to exculpate the Jews, as far as that is humanly possible, of responsibility for the passion and crucifixion of Jesus Christ. And of course, behind whatever the Jews had done was, we believe, all of us, our own centuries of sin, we were the ones, we can say, we were the ones who condemn the Master. However, let's be clear. Those who condemn Jesus, they were not the true followers of their own prophets. One after the other, Isaiah, Jeremiah, they were all very clear about who the Messiah would be in predicting his coming and describing down to the least detail the qualities of the real Messiah when he came. We ask, why was Jesus rejected by some of the leaders of Israel? I repeat, there must be 50 places in the catechism where a conscious, studied effort is made not to totally exculpate the Jewish people from responsibility for the death of Christ, but to make sure that we do not make the mistake of supposing that because Christ was crucified, that therefore we are not responsible for his crucifixion. We are. Here's what the Catechism tells us. Why was Jesus rejected by the leaders of Israel? Because they thought, first, he was indifferent to full obedience of their law. Again, that he was indifferent to the centrality of the temple in divine worship. And because they thought that faith in one God, whose glory no human being can share, was being compromised by Jesus, who identified himself as one with the Father. If ever we are tempted to take Christ's claims to divinity for granted, let's be sure that Christ's Jewish contemporaries did not take them for granted. Indeed, they took Christ's claims so seriously, it was precisely because Jesus identified himself as one with the Father that they then, when they finally came to condemn him, they did so, among other reasons, because he claimed to be one with the Father. As those who try to stone Jesus remember, they were holding these rocks in their hands, ready to stone him to death, and Christ calmly asked them, "For what good work are you trying to stone me?" "It's not for any good work," they told him. "It's because you, though man, make yourself equal to God. And the revealed Greek of the gospel has a Greek word isos, I-S-O-S. You make yourself mathematically identical with God. And you wonder why we're trying to stone you? You blasphemer? And whatever else you forget from this retreat, try not to forget this. For now over 1,300 years, the followers of Muhammad, it being as plain as Arabic, can make it for them. We Christians who claim, we profess it to be true, who say that Isa, the son of Mary, is the son of Allah, the son of God. The 500 million Muslims throughout the world, and the deepest religious sense of the word, they hate these idolaters who have divinized a man and make him out to be God. But hear it. The Arabian and Near East, in which Muhammad was born, and in which he established Islam, was where the Patriarch Archbishop of Constantinople, by name Nestorius, back in the early 5th century, 2 centuries before Muhammad, he was the one who denied absolutely, utterly, that Mary is Theotokos, that Mary is the mother of God. No, said the patriarch, she's the mother of Jesus. Because Nestorius denied Christ's divinity. There'd be no Muslims in the world instead of 500 million, except for the heretic Archbishop Nestorius. Only God knows, only he knows the damage by now to millions of souls when those who are leaders of the church become apostates from their Catholic faith. And if there was ever a century of apostasy, the 20th century is one. That is one of the categories that is so uncompromising, absolute, clear on these basic truths of our faith, and pleading with the people of God to know what they believe, to live it, to preach it, to show it, and then, in one passage after another, to be willing to die for it. That's the catechism. When 24 Muslim nations in Africa form a union, and their first budget was $1 billion in American money in Africa to to wipe out Christianity from the continent of Africa. So I tell so many Americans, we are living in a dream world. We've been hypnotized by our media. We go on. Christ our Lord, the Catechism asks, why did Jesus foretell the destruction of the temple? And after more than 19 centuries, by now, it should not be because the Jewish people did not have the mazuma to rebuild the temple. That's not the reason. They no longer have the faith. Answer. Question, remember. Why did Jesus foretell the destruction of the temple? He did so to predict the dawn of a new age in salvation history. Moreover, he wished to emphasize the fact that he himself was the perfect dwelling place of God among his people. How this needs to be etched in bronze. And I'm speaking of the right city. You don't close 62 churches in the Archdiocese of Chicago without a reason. There is a reason. The Catholic Church will survive in any diocese in the world. And just for the record, how I painfully like to repeat the statistic. There are 2,300 still living active dioceses in the world today. 2,300. But there were over 1,900 extinct dioceses. Almost 2,000. The Catholic Church survives only where there are still believers in Jesus Christ as the incarnate Son of God who is on earth, living in the fullness of his humanity and divinity as the Son of Mary who became our incarnate God and living among us in the Holy Eucharist. As the faith of people goes in the real presence, so goes the Catholic Church. By now, I believe it is 8 retreats that I repeated the Holy Father's directive to this sinner, to his private secretary. Call twice to Rome by the Pope's secretary. Whatever you do, fine Catholics who still believe, in the real presence. Encourage them. Strengthen their faith. Tell them to pay attention to no one. Jesus Christ is on earth. Those who believe that are Catholics. No one else is. In other words, as the Catechism makes so plain, mysteriously, God was present by His special grace in the temple in Jerusalem. The dream of every believing Jew to make a pilgrimage to the holy city of Jerusalem and pray in the temple at least once before he entered eternity. But now, how we need to hear this. For us Catholics, every church in which the Blessed Sacrament is reserved is, in the most literal sense of the word, is the temple of the Most High, where the God who became man is living. God as man, or during his visible stay on earth more than once, visited the temple in Jerusalem. But I know what I'm talking about. I've been in too many empty chapels and monasteries and convents. I'll never forget the article that my good friend Bishop Hastrich wrote in one issue of Priest Magazine. Picture on the outside cover of the doors of a Catholic church, chained and locked. The greatest tragedy in America, says the title, Closed Catholic Churches. All of this is locked up in this fourth article of the Apostles' Creed.